Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Life Coach Radio Network. I'm Jen Duffy, and thanks so much for joining us tonight for this edition of the Happy Healthy Hour. Callers can dial in to 646-716-9397 and press 1 at any time if you'd like to be on the air and place in the queue. We'll be taking questions, comments, and ideas from the audience tonight. So today, we're talking about sleep. And actually, it's kind of interesting because this is the first time that the Happy Healthy Hour is taking place while it's dark outside here in New York and on the East Coast. So last weekend, we adjusted the time and we fell back, so everyone got an extra hour of sleep, which was really great. And particularly when we talk a little bit more about some of the health benefits and really how not getting enough sleep can be, you know, very harmful on your health. And, you know, when we talk about being healthy, a lot of times we're talking about two key factors, the two E's, eating and exercising. But we're often forgetting about the Z's and how important sleep is to being healthy and happy. And it's not just about what you're eating and if you're moving your body, but then also if you're taking care of your body and resting your body when it needs to restore and to heal and to really allow the natural processes of our body to be happening to keep everything functioning and being healthy. And so, you know, when we lose the hour of sleep and we spring forward in the springtime, you know, it really does a number on people who are affected by this sleep deprivation. You know, actually studies have shown that car accidents and heart attacks will increase around that time. You know, people are less productive at their jobs. And it can often take people a bit of time to get back to a normal sleep schedule when the time adjusts. And even when we, you know, set the clocks back, it can often, you know, take some time to get used to a new sleep schedule. And, you know, once it's dark out and you feel like it's ready to go to, you know, you're ready to go to bed and it's, you're still at work. So it can take some time to get adjusted, and there are a lot of things that you can do to try and reset your sleep clock and so that you're not constantly feeling like you're dragging and that you are rested. You know, we live in a very fast-paced world today where everyone is sort of burning the candles at both ends and not getting enough sleep. And really, it's almost kind of seen as a badge of honor of how little you slept. You know, oh, I didn't get to sleep till this time last night, or, oh, you know, I only need 4 hours of sleep. And for some people, that very well may be the case that they only need a few hours of sleep. You know, there's a lot of studies of people or case studies of famous people and that they've, out, you know, very much cited their lack for needing a good night's sleep and that they were very successful and accomplished on a few hours a night. But for the most part, most of us really do need between 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night. And that kind of seems to be the optimal amount of sleep for most adults based on a lot of the research that's done that thus far. And that really too much sleep or too little. So it's not just even sleep deprivation. It can be sleeping too much. Both of those can have, you know, adverse effects on your health. And according to the National Sleep Foundation, more than 40 million Americans are not getting enough sleep, and that about 60% of adults experience sleep problems a few nights a week. You know, and a lot of all these reasons why are because of the various demands that we have in our life. And some of it can be because you're a parent of a small child or you have to work late. And some of it can be related to health conditions. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. But, you know, chronic sleep issues is really something that needs to be addressed, that you want to address through taking lifestyle measures, consulting a doctor, changing your diet, changing your activity level, because long-term, not getting good, restful sleep the right amount on a somewhat regular basis can really affect your health and even eventually lead to, you know, a shortened lifespan. And so some of these insomnia symptoms that we're going to talk about that, you know, people should be on the lookout for if this is something they're regularly experiencing is having a really hard time falling asleep tonight, awakening, you know, frequently throughout the night, or awakening too early and not actually even feeling rested after a night's sleep. And some of these causes can be related to stress or illness, you know, such as depression, obesity, hypertension, having a really busy mind, your lifestyle habits, menopause, and side effects even from certain medications can disrupt your sleep cycle. And so these are all things to be mindful of. But before we get into talking about, you know, the correlation between sleep and health, some ways that you can go about getting a better night's sleep and some of those changes that can be made to make sure you're really, you know, getting the most of that time spent on with your head on the pillow. Let's start off with the usual what we're drinking feature. And so since I wanted to talk about some things that will help with sleep and getting good sleep, I'm actually not drinking it myself today because I don't want to make myself tired before our show. So I just wanted to give a few types of beverages that have health benefits correlated to sleep. And so, you know, a nice evening treat that you could potentially make in lieu of a dessert and that would have some good sleep-inducing benefits could be a small banana smoothie. And that's because bananas contain potassium and magnesium, which are actually two minerals that will help muscles relax. And when your muscles are more relaxed, you're able to be relaxed and fall asleep better. And so I wouldn't drink this right before you go to bed, but, you know, in the evening, in lieu of having a sugary sweet or something, if you want a little treat, blending a small banana with a tablespoon of almond butter and half a cup of unsweetened soy milk or almond milk or coconut milk or dairy if you prefer as well, that would really be something kind of sweet, but sweetness coming from some good natural sugars that would help you maybe relax as well. So it's, you know, a lot of things that have a lot of sugar or some sweets have hidden caffeine, so things that have a lot of chocolate in them, that could not promote some restful sleep. It could actually make you more wired and so be counterintuitive to the goal of trying to get to sleep. And so two other beverages that actually, if you drink throughout the day, can also help promote sleep. One is tart cherry juice. And there was a small study published in the Journal of Medicinal Food in 2010, and that study showed that consuming 2 8-ounce servings of tart cherry juice throughout the day in the morning and then about 2 or 3 hours before bedtime did actually show some a decrease in insomnia. And tart cherry juice also has some really great benefits for joint pain and sort of arthritic conditions. It can help with that because it is such a powerful antioxidant. And they repeated the study with respect to tart cherry juice and insomnia again in September in another publication, another journal, and it showed similar results. And the thinking behind this is that cherries contain melatonin, which is an antioxidant that's known to help regulate our sleep cycle. And so we'll talk a little bit more about melatonin later in the show. A third beverage is coconut water. And even though coconut water gets advertised as an energy-boosting drink, or a hydrating drink, so after you've done a vigorous workout, it may actually also help you sleep better if you drink it, you know, in the day, because coconut is also a good source of potassium and magnesium, which, again, also help you your muscles relax. And it also contains a small amount of B vitamins, and B vitamins can help lower stress. And so drinking a coconut water could be a good way to help add to your ability to get some good restful sleep, as well as it's a good hydrating drink as well. I know it's become quite popular. You see coconut water on the shelves of many health food stores and even regular mainstream food stores now. The one thing to watch is when you are picking a brand, I would check out the sodium content and the sugar content, because some of the drinks will add sweeteners or give it some flavor. So really kind of the pure coconut water that has not any additional sugar or added salt is a good way to go. And there are a lot of teas out there as well that you can drink in the evening. Now, teas that have caffeine, you'll probably want to refrain from drinking close to bedtime, a few hours before bedtime. Again, the caffeine is a stimulant and it'll keep you up. And then also, it might irritate your bladder and kidneys, so you have to go to the bathroom a lot in the middle of the night. And so sometimes people wake up and don't get continuous sleep because they have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And so trying to consume your liquids earlier in the evening and not close to bedtime can help. And so you want to avoid the caffeinated teas in the evening, but there are some really good herbal and caffeine-free teas that are nice to drink in the evening that will help promote more rest and sleep. And so chamomile is a good choice, lavender, lemon balm, which is a lemon-scented member of the mint family, so it's like a mint tea, but it's lemon balm, and you can steep those leaves. And then valerian, and that is that's often you see in those like sleepy time teas or teas that are meant to promote sleep. The only thing is they do have some contraindications, and it shouldn't be taken for a really long time. Like if you have it every night, it could potentially lead to dependency of needing to drink that tea every night. And it also can interfere with some prescription drugs, particularly, I think, cholesterol drugs. So you would want to check with your doctor before drinking any of the more potent herbal teas, particularly that valerian root is one that can really be great. A lot of people find a lot of success with that as a natural herbal remedy to sleep. But you do want to check with your doctor, because I think what's been reported about that particular supplement is that it can have, you know, interactions with drugs. So that's the one you'd want to check out with your doctor if you're talking to them about some of the sleep issues you're experiencing and trying to figure out a better plan or game plan in the evenings to help you get to sleep and stay asleep. So if you're just tuning in now, you're listening to the Happy Healthy Hour on the Life Coach Radio Network. Listeners can call in to 646-716-9397 and press 1 at any time if you'd like to be on the air and placed in the queue. And I really hope you'll check out some of the other shows on the network, both the Life Coach Radio Network and the International Life Coach Radio Network. So today's topic is sleep, and we're talking about the health benefits of sleep and also ways that you can get a better night's sleep. So most people just really don't get enough sleep. You know, as I was saying before, we're really a sleep-deprived culture, trying to do so many things, staying up late often for purposes of studying if we're in school, working, your jobs will require us to stay late or go home from the office, make dinner, put the kids to bed, and then log back online and do more work, you know, just because, you know, everyone is so competitive and it's so many challenges and demands on us all the time. Or even just to have fun. You know, a lot of times people will work all day and then go out and stay up too late and not go to sleep. And, you know, depending on what phase of your life in, I mean, these are all various reasons that will be preventing you from getting a good night's sleep. I remember I was in grad school and going to grad school full-time, working full-time, and also, you know, going out and seeing friends, and sleep was the big thing that I sacrificed. I just, you know, that always seemed like an optional thing. As long as the work stuff was getting done, the school stuff was going on, I was making time to see my friends, that was, you know, a success. But not really realizing that, you know, sacrificing the sleep is just not healthy. And it all eventually caught up to me, and I ended up going to see my doctor, and she was like, she'd send me to the emergency room. I had come down with sort of a flu type thing, and I was just so exhausted, so wiped out, you know, and really needed to rest and had to kind of reset my body. And it was kind of a wake-up call that, you know, even though I was young at the time, you need to really treat your body with respect. And one of the key elements to doing that is rest and getting proper rest and getting enough sleep. And so, you know, the hope is that when people will really start to understand more and more about the importance of rest and sleep, and that it's not seen so much as a luxury, but really rather a necessity, and that we encourage each other to go to bed when we're tired or not feeling well, and not, you know, try to push people to stay up late or push things when they're not well. Because, you know, in the short term, a lack of proper sleep can affect our judgment or our mood or our ability to sort of retain information, and, you know, even up the risk of accidents and injury. But in the long term, you know, not getting enough sleep really can lead to some serious health problems such as obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and even, as I mentioned before, a shortened lifespan. And so, you know, we've all known the effects of not getting enough sleep just on a night. You know, we'll be moody or snappy, you know, even kind of giddy. I've definitely felt when I'm overtired, I've just gone into sort of giddiness, and everything, it just seems like things aren't making sense. And, you know, that's affecting our cognitive ability, and that's just on a night or two, you know, if you're on a deadline or something. But, you know, a consistent basis of that really has some significant tolls on our bodies. And, you know, the cost of not getting enough sleep is really much greater than a lot of people think. You know, and research is really starting to show that consistently not getting enough sleep is elevating the risk for these chronic diseases, and that there is more of an emphasis on treating sleep as a priority and it really being an important step to preventing a lot of these medical conditions. And the reason being is that sleep is needed for the body to repair and replenish cells. You know, our cells are constantly being damaged due to stress, our environments, you know, the chemicals, toxins, ultraviolet light, you know, and the body needs time to rejuvenate and repair these damaged cells. Also, sleep is important to triggering hormones that will regulate, you know, our moods, our energy. It's needed for the mind. There's been a lot of articles lately showing that, you know, when you don't get enough sleep, the brain swells. It's a recent Times article that was talking more about that. And, you know, you need sleep to stay alert, to remember things. It's really hard to, you know, remember things sometimes if you're not getting enough sleep. And also for the immune system. Sleep's really critical to fight infections, as well as just metabolizing. You know, chronic insomnia can lead to obesity and diabetes because of the way that your body is metabolizing the food that it's eating and sort of the hormones in the body. And so really good sleep is so needed, even though in our 24/7 lifestyles that are so crazy and so hectic, it sort of falls to the wayside. You know, and, you know, there are a lot of scientific studies that are being done now, and actually a really great site to really kind of delve deeper into these correlations is on Harvard. They have, it's called healthysleep.med.harvard.edu, and it really gets into the relationship between sleep and health and talks about the different kinds of studies that are being done. And, you know, this is not just anecdotal that, oh, I feel good when I get sleep, but there's a lot of evidence to support it. There's actually three sort of main types of studies that they're doing to help demonstrate these links between sleep habits and, you know, disease risk. The first type is sleep deprivation studies, and that's where they take healthy volunteers to deprive them of sleep and look at some of the short-term changes that occur that could trigger disease. And, you know, some of these studies have revealed that sleep deprivation usually is associated with increased stress, increased blood pressure, impaired control of blood glucose, and increased inflammation. So one way that researchers are beginning to really document the effects is through sleep deprivation, which many of us go through on a regular basis. And so taking a pool of healthy volunteers and looking and analyzing it, what that then correlates to changes in the body. A second type is cross-sectional epidemiological studies, which this is really looking at a cross-section of the population and examining questionnaires that people fill out to talk about their sleep patterns and their sleep durations, and then seeing that if there's a link to a particular disease or group of diseases in larger populations. And so, for example, reduced sleep and increased sleep, when it's reported on these questionnaires, they are actually then seeing a link directly to hypertension, diabetes, and obesity. And so, you know, when you see people who exhibit these diseases and then also show what their sleep patterns are like, you can sort of draw some of these linkages, and this is what's being done within the research community to help really further bolster the linkages and understand the critical role that sleep plays. And a third study that's being done as well are looking at the development of numerous diseases that come from tracking sleep habits over the long term. And so these are longitudinal studies. So they're done over a long time. So people are healthy in the beginning, and then they track and see what happens over time based on different sleep habits. And so these three different ways of looking at the effects on sleep of healthy individuals and then towards disease progression is helping to inform the information that's out there about getting the right amount of sleep and really understanding, again, how that's linked to disease. And, you know, there's really three major conditions that have become much more prevalent in recent years, and there is some strong evidence to show that sleep plays a role. So one being obesity. Not getting enough sleep has been linked to a high probability for weight gain, and studies have shown that people who habitually sleep less than 6 hours a night are much more likely to have a higher average body mass index, or BMI, and that people who sleep 8 hours tend to have the lowest BMI. You know, and sleep is being seen as a potential risk factor for obesity in addition to lack of exercise and overeating. And sometimes these things can all be sort of correlated together. And so there's more research being done to understand the mechanisms that are involved in regulating our metabolism and appetite and sort of the connection between sleep. If you ever noticed that you tend to crave bad food choices if you're overtired. You know, sometimes you can be looking to crave sugar or caffeine because you're looking for a sort of a quick fix to boost your energy. And so not getting enough sleep and being tired then impacts your ability to make good food choices. And so you pick bad food choices that are further sort of perpetuating the propensity to be obese or to have weight gain or to be overweight. And so when we sleep, our bodies secrete hormones that help to control our appetites, our energy metabolism, and also the glucose processing. And so when you get too little sleep, it kind of disrupts the, you know, the balance of these hormones, and, you know, sort of everything kind of goes out of whack, and it can lead to an increase in cortisol, which is often, you know, referred to as the stress hormone. And so, you know, poor sleep can also be associated with increase in secretion of insulin after a meal, and insulin is what regulates glucose processing and promotes fat storage. So when you have higher levels of insulin, they're associated with weight gain, which is also a risk factor for diabetes. And so not getting enough sleep can also affect the levels of hormones that sort of alert the brain that it's had enough food, so that when your body kicks in and says, okay, I'm not hungry anymore, I don't need to eat. So not getting enough sleep can often cause you to overeat, in addition to making sort of poor food choices. And so mentioning diabetes, that's another chronic condition that can be exacerbated by lack of sleep. Researchers have found that insufficient sleep may lead to type 2 diabetes by influencing the way that the body processes glucose, as I was mentioning before, you know, the sort of high energy carbohydrate that we use for fuel. And one short-term sleep study found that a group of healthy people who had their sleep cut back from 8 hours to 4 hours per night processed glucose more slowly than they did when they were permitted to sleep 12 hours a night. So numerous studies have revealed that these people who don't get enough sleep have a higher risk of developing diabetes because of the way that we are processing glucose. Another really, you know, key chronic condition that is, you know, we're seeing more and more of these days is heart disease and high blood pressure. And so even minor periods of inadequate sleep can raise your blood pressure. And so, you know, it's not surprising when we think about the reasons people are getting less sleep, you know, increased stress and just more demands and just being a faster paced world where we're plugged in all the time and, you know, are constantly connected to our devices and, you know, checking in and being inundated with information on a 24/7, you know, time frame, that these things also influence, you know, being obese, having your risk for diabetes and your risk for heart disease and hypertension. And so it's kind of a, you know, a chicken or an egg, and there's definitely a lot more evidence showing that there is a clear correlation. And so with respect to high blood pressure, studies have found, you know, that if you have existing high blood pressure, that just a single night of not getting enough sleep can cause elevated blood pressure the next day. And so they're thinking that this is really beginning to explain the correlation between poor sleep, cardiovascular disease, and stroke. And one study had found that sleeping too little, less than 6 hours, or too much, more than 9 hours, for purposes of the study, did increase the risk of coronary heart disease in women over time. And so sleep is really important to preventing disease, but it's also a really important component to healing. You know, it's natural for people to go to bed when they are sick, actually. You know, people often try to fight it, but that's really your body telling you to go to sleep because there are substances produced by our immune system that will help fight infection, but they also cause fatigue. And so that, you know, there have been some theories that say that, you know, our immune system evolved these sleep-inducing factors because when you do sleep, you can deal with an infection better able than when you don't sleep. And so people, when they are sick or have some sort of infection, when they sleep, they tend to heal better than someone who's not sleeping, because your body's able to heal itself through the proper rest that's needed, and that there's really sort of a biological, you know, process that's taking place, and it is so necessary. So pushing through the fatigue when you're not well isn't always the smartest thing to do, and may actually, you know, be a hindrance to your healing. One interesting fact, though, as well, is that sleep can actually also be a key to a better sex life. It's been found, there was a Sleep in America poll done in 2010 that showed about 20 to 30% of men and women had felt that their family life and sexual relationships had been affected by, you know, chronic sleep issues or sleepiness. So according to the researchers, the better rested you are, the better sex you'll have. So a lot of positive benefits to getting more sleep, you know, some more, you know, dire than others. But it is really becoming something that is well documented, is that the need for sleep and the impact to our health and our ability to heal. And it's very counterintuitive to just the way that our lifestyles have become. But it is something I think people are starting to make more of a priority. And there is also a lot of information out there about how you can try to adapt and find ways to improve your sleep by making changes in your lifestyle. And so let's talk a little bit about, you know, when is a good time to sleep and how to make some of those lifestyle changes. I know if you've been listening for the past half hour, you're probably saying, okay, great, I get it. I need to sleep more. You know, it's bad not to sleep, but how am I going to do that? Because I just don't have the extra time. I don't have enough time in my day to do what I need to do, let alone find time to get more sleep. You know, sleep is definitely, as I mentioned before, when you have a busy full schedule, the first thing that goes, that gets sacrificed. And unfortunately, it's important not to make that sacrifice. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So, you know, in the human body, there is sort of an internal clock or circadian rhythm, and that's really a cycle in the body. It's also in plants and animals, and it sets our sleeping and eating patterns, you know, the production of our hormones and our body temperature, among other things. And so it is naturally synchronized with and affected by daylight, sunlight, you know, so with sunrise, sunset, and just time zones. And so when your internal clock sort of functioning properly, you will be sleepy when it's time to go to bed, and you will, you know, rise when you wake up. If you've ever noticed, if you've done sort of like a sleep experiment, or even if you're maybe on vacation and actually have a week where you maybe are going to bed around the same time and waking up around the same time, you will start to feel like a natural clock sets in that, you know, it's time of day you want to fall asleep, and you might even wake up without setting an alarm clock. But you know, we're so reliant on our alarm clocks and that jolt of caffeine in the morning. You know, that's a lot of times because we are trying to push through not getting enough rest or getting enough sleep. And if you are more in a cycle or a rhythm, you might feel more rested and not need sort of that caffeine crutch, or, you know, that constantly feeling sluggish all day, which, you know, is important to consider. Now, sometimes feeling sleepy and being tired and being fatigued might not necessarily be a direct result of just not getting enough sleep. And often there can be underlying medical conditions. So if you are feeling tired a lot or all the time, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be so quick to write it off as, oh, I'm just not getting enough sleep. So there are times when that fatigue really could be a clue that something is more, you know, more serious. And it is good to get that checked out and talk to your doctor. I've definitely, you know, heard of friends who have had underlying illnesses and, you know, just assumed they were tired a lot because they were busy working moms or for a multitude of reasons. And, you know, you do want to listen to your body and not ignore symptoms if you think something is wrong. But trying to take some steps to get better sleep if you really do think that, you know, it just could be the quality of your sleep, or you know that you're not getting good quality of sleep. You know, there are things we can do. And so to try and, you know, help keep our natural sleep patterns more attuned, and, you know, if you've ever been jet lagged, you can see how off kilter you can feel when you're not sleeping on a regular schedule. It's a good idea to get at least 15 to 30 minutes of sunlight daily. You can even get that from standing near a window, but just really trying to get some outdoor natural light that will help, you know, stimulate the body, the production, to help get your natural circadian rhythms in line. And like I was saying before, to the extent possible, keeping a regular sleep schedule can really be beneficial. I know that's very challenging to do sometimes if people's schedules are a bit more erratic, but, you know, we do this often for our kids. We'll have them go to bed at a certain time, get up a certain time, you know, particularly when they're school age, because everyone understands that, you know, children who are rested tend to perform better in school, and there's been a lot of studies and, you know, documentation to support that. But, you know, the same applies for grown-ups and adults, that we still need some level of consistency, and that can help us feel better and get a better quality of sleep when we are on a schedule. And that can also be, you know, a challenge on the weekends. I think a lot of times people have a desire to sleep in on the weekends, and, you know, I love to sleep in when I get the opportunity, but over time that really doesn't actually help you, you know, reset your clock. It can actually sometimes be more disruptive when you try and catch up on sleep, and that you're actually not catching up on sleep, even though it feels good. But sometimes, you know, if you are dragging or feeling a little run down, that extra boost of sleep can help your immune system. But trying to stick to a sleep schedule will ultimately help get to a point where your quality of sleep can be a bit better. And, you know, napping is one of the things that is a little controversial. People are pro-nap, but then there's also, at the same time, if you take too long of a nap. So it's kind of about the quantity and quality of your nap, where if you are dragging and you need sort of a short burst of sleep, a nap can be really great. But if you sleep too much during the day, then it can disrupt your sleep in the evening. So it's finding that right balance. You know, and one of the things that I think comes up a lot in talking about getting good night's sleep is finding a wind-down routine or some way to sort of calm yourself before bed. And so, you know, an hour or two before bed, trying to turn off the TV, the computer, and the gadgets. And I think most of us kind of will fall to a habit of either watching TV in bed or playing on our computers in bed or checking the email one last time before the lights turned off and the head hits the pillow. And really, that's something that, you know, we need to push back on. It's so tempting to do, but there's, you know, really strong case that besides just being overstimulating, those are also exposing us to the blue light, which can disrupt the circadian rhythm and thinking it's daylight, because this strong light that's being emanated to your devices is not making your body think, okay, it's getting dark, it's nighttime, it's time to go to bed. And so choosing things like a book or just listening to some music or even yoga or meditation, doing some simple stretches, lying down, not really vigorous things, that those can be activities that will help wind you down as opposed to make your body think, okay, I got to be up and on for another couple hours. And if you're curious more about meditation, the last show I had done 2 weeks ago was on developing a meditation practice. So I'd encourage you to check that out if you weren't able to tune in. And that really talks about kind of meditation for beginners and how to start meditating and cultivating a meditation practice of your own if it's something that's new to you. And so, you know, finding down that wind down routine, you know, trying to eliminate too much sensory overload or stimulation is really helpful. And a lot of people think or like to take a hot bath in the evening, and that can be something really good because having a soak in the tub can help relax your muscles and calm you down. But actually, you might not want to do that too close to bedtime, because anything that raises your body temperature too close to bedtime may actually hinder you from falling asleep, because your body needs to cool down to sort of an optimal temperature in order to really reach that good, sound, deep sleep. And so it doesn't mean you can't take a bath. It just means that taking it a little bit earlier before, not too close to bedtime, might help and help you get to that optimal temperature that's needed to sleep. And one of the things I think people commonly hear about is, and it can be challenging, is eating and drinking before bedtime. And ideally, if you can eat your dinner at least 3 hours before bedtime, and I have totally been guilty of getting home from work late, eating, and then being exhausted and going to bed, but it's really not ideal. And particularly foods that can contribute to insomnia include alcohol, caffeine, refined carbs, sugar, salt-rich foods, and junk food. And often a lot of times in some of the junk food, the hidden ingredient, as I mentioned before, is caffeine. And some foods that can really help you reduce insomnia and help you, you know, sleep better are foods that are rich in magnesium. And some of these foods include spinach, beans, lentils, avocados, bananas, as we mentioned before, you know, plain non-fat yogurt, and unrefined grains. And we'll talk a little bit more about some other sleep superfoods, you know, later in the show. But with respect to alcohol, alcohol has, you know, sort of mild sedative qualities that make you sleepy. You know, everyone has that sort of sleepiness they feel after, you know, a glass or two of wine, but it actually can contribute to poor sleep. And, you know, the sort of studies have shown that's kind of twofold, that a lot of times alcohol can be used sort of as a sleep aid. So, you know, if you're stressed and you're trying to wind down and you have a glass or two of wine, you feel more relaxed and you feel tired. But the thing is that that's really only temporary, and that as alcohol is processed by the body, you know, in a few hours, it then starts to stimulate parts of the brain that can cause you to wake up again and then get sleep problems later in the night. So, you know, a lot of times you may fall asleep after having a drink for a little while, but then wake up in the night and you're awake and you can't fall back to sleep, or you need a glass of water, or you have to go to the bathroom. So, you know, having alcohol, you know, in moderation and not too close to bedtime can help, particularly if you are having, you know, some sleep issues and want to try and see if you can get deeper, more restful sleep. So avoiding the alcohol in the evening or too close to bedtime could help. And so, you know, with respect to eating as well late at night, you know, there are certain snacks that might help. And what's been shown to be helpful is things that are a healthy combination of carbs and protein, or things that have tryptophan. And, you know, Thanksgiving's coming up and we all feel sleepy after turkey. That can be attributed to the tryptophan. And then it also can just be attributed to a lot of times having a very large meal will make you feel sleepy. But some healthy combinations of carbs and proteins might be, you know, having a small glass of milk and a graham cracker or two, or some yogurt, some non-fat yogurt, low-fat yogurt sprinkled with a little bit of cereal. Like, sometimes those combinations can be a good snack. But you really do want to try and stay away from the sugary or the salty or the junk foods late at night, because that's not going to help you sleep well. And, you know, with exercise, there's a lot of discussion about how important that exercising is to getting proper night's sleep. And I know that anytime I exercise or have a really, you know, vigorous, I go to a spin class or do something, I sleep great that night. But again, as long as it's not too close to bedtime. Anytime I've exercised too late at night, I'm up, I'm wired, I can't fall asleep, and then it does sort of disrupt kind of the sleep schedule and pattern. And so really it's a good idea to try and do, you know, your intense workouts earlier in the day. But it, you know, can help to just do a little gentle stretching before you go to sleep, which can help with your mind, it can help with your breath, and just relax and reduce sort of muscle tension that you might be holding on to before you go to sleep. So kind of lying down on your back on your bed and maybe hugging your knees to your chest and doing some gentle twists and breathing, doing this, you know, for 10 minutes or so might be a nice wind down for you. And try to get that exercise in earlier in the day. You know, having a sedentary lifestyle can contribute to insomnia, and more of us are sedentary. You know, so much of what we spend doing during the day is sitting, and then we go home, and then we sit again if we're eating dinner and watching TV, and then we lie down and go to bed. So there's really not so much movement if you're not walking as part of your commute or getting that exercise in. And in addition to insomnia, you know, the physical inactivity can really lead to a lot of other health issues. And then coupled with insomnia and these health issues, you're really just further exacerbating your risk for being unhealthy. And so getting the exercise in, you know, doing regular aerobic exercise and physical activity throughout the day will help you get better sleep. And, you know, not doing it late at night so that your heart rate and your body, you know, goes back to a normal resting state before bedtime. And the recommended, you know, goal that most people, I think, have heard is trying to get 30 minutes a day, you know, at least five days a week, but 30 minutes if you can, and not necessarily 30 uninterrupted minutes. It can be broken up throughout the day, but that's a good level of physical activity to shoot for a myriad of health reasons, one of which is getting, you know, better sleep. And so let's talk a little bit about creating an environment that's conducive to sleep. You'll want to keep the temperature in your bedroom no higher than 70 degrees. And studies have shown that the optimal temperature, room temperature for sleep, is sort of between 60 and 68 degrees. And then if you keep your room colder than that, you know, you might have restless sleep because you're trying to stay warm and you're not sleep, it's too hard to sleep when you're cold. I've definitely gone camping when haven't had the appropriate gear and realize that, oh, it's hard to sleep when you're shivering. But also, if it's too hot, you can lead to restless sleep. I'm sure people have spent a night in a hot summer somewhere with no breeze, no air conditioning, you know, and realize that you definitely toss and turn more. So if to the extent you can create an optimal temperature for sleeping, that is a good way to go, as well as, you know, making sure that your actual sleep environment, being your choice of pillow, your mattress, your sleep the blanket, everything that you have. And these are good things to invest in and things that make you feel comfortable and you enjoy. If you spend 8 hours a day in your bed, you know, if you do the math on that, you spend a lot of hours of your life sleeping in bed. And for good reason, it helps you heal, it helps you stay healthy. And so making sure that it's a comfortable environment is a good use of your time, and trying to avoid from doing a lot of things in bed other than sleep. I know everyone hears that, you know, you shouldn't work on your computer, and it's tempting sometimes, particularly if it's cold, you want to stay in bed and maybe, you know, turn on your computer or do work or read or something. Studies have shown that really spending time in bed for sleep and restricting those purposes does help sort of cultivate more peace of mind and more association with sleep when you reserve the bed for sleeping and for other things, not including sort of working, watching a lot of television, being on the computer. And so being in a dark room is also helpful. I know that a lot of people, myself included, find a sleep mask very helpful. And quiet. So cool, dark, and quiet are really, really key attributes to creating an environment that's conducive to sleep. So, you know, depending on your comfort level, earplugs can be a way to go. Now, if you're listening for small children or you have caring for someone who's sick, earplugs might not be the way to go. But I know a lot of people, you know, some who have partners or spouses who snore, or they live in a city and there's a lot of noise, outside noise, or they have noisy neighbors, earplugs can sometimes help keep things quiet and not disrupt you. And for some people, they find taking a melatonin supplement can help. And, you know, this can be if you have a hard time feeling tired when you know it's bedtime and you're not tired yet, and so it's hard to get yourself to get to sleep. You know, and the recommendation is to take a 3-milligram tablet, you know, about 15 to 20 minutes before bed. And your brain actually makes melatonin, and that's the body's way sort of telling the body it's time for sleep. But a lot of people have suppressed melatonin production because they've been overexposed to light in the evening. You know, the light indoors, artificial light, light from computers, light from, you know, gadgets, what have you. And so a lot of people find a melatonin supplement to be very, very helpful. But you do want to consult with your doctor before you take a melatonin supplement. You know, it's not recommended for pregnant women. It's not recommended for women trying to conceive. It's not recommended for children or adolescent boys because it can affect testosterone in adolescent boys. And so, this might be a helpful supplement, but I would check with your doctor to make sure it doesn't interact with any other medications you may be on and that there's no other contraindications such as, you know, being pregnant, trying to conceive. Another natural remedy can be using essential oils. I really love Young Living essential oils, the Peace and Calm oil, and sort of a blend of a few different oils it's a combo one. I'm not exactly sure what's in it, but it smells so heavenly. It's just so delightful. And, you know, my husband even likes it. He's like, ooh, what is that? It smells so good, because I'll put a drop on my wrist and rub my wrist together, or I'll put it on a tissue and then put the tissue in my pillowcase. You don't want to pour it directly onto your sheets because it's sort of a green issue and it might stain. But just the aroma of it is so calming and soothing and relaxing. I guess the name Peace and Calm says it all, but there are some essential oils that can really help. The power of aromatherapy can be quite potent for some people. And so I find that doing a little bit of the essential oil at night, putting that on, and then putting my sleep mask on, and then maybe listening to a little relaxed music, I definitely drift off and stay in a much deeper state of sleep when I take the time to do that, as opposed to just collapse into bed and, you know, hope for the best. And just even kind of thinking about your mental state in the evening. You know, if you're watching things that are too stimulating or scary or kind of horrific, these things might not do so well with, like, sort of your brain activity while you're sleeping and help you relax. It's better off to try and read something that's more soothing or spiritual or uplifting and gets you kind of more in that mindset before you go to sleep. And another thing that can be helpful, too, in terms of sort of shifting your mind state can be writing things down before you go to bed. So making a lot of times what keeps us up is our busy mind, thinking of all the things we did that day, thinking about the things we have to do tomorrow. The to-do list have to-do list have to-do list. So maybe jotting some of that down might work for you in terms of, I'm not going to sit there, you know, in the dark with my eyes closed, but feeling totally alert and just running through my list in my head, taking a few minutes before you go to bed, jotting down the things you might have on your mind. And so it's done, it's written down, and you can, you know, resume that when you wake up, but just let it be off your mind. And so that particularly can help when you feel like the racing mind is what's keeping you awake. And so these are some of the tips that, you know, I think can help you create a better sleep environment. It's sort of lifestyle related in terms of when you exercise, how frequently you exercise, when you eat, what you eat, when you eat, the environment, the physical environment in which you're sleeping. You know, I would also try to not only limit your use to the gadgets, but exposure to them. You know, I know quite a bit of us will keep our gadgets right close to our head, and, you know, they'll buzz in the middle of the night or they'll light up. And so trying to keep those away, maybe charge them in another room if you can, or a little bit further away, you know, if you do want to keep your cell phone in case you need to, you know, have it on you in case of emergency or people need to get in touch with you. But not having it right next to you can be a good thing. And so I think another good source of info is the Mayo Clinic site. They had some great tips, things we covered about sticking to a sleep schedule, paying attention to the food. Some of the other foods that, in addition to the ones we mentioned, fish. Fish can be great. Shrimp, cod, tuna, and halibut have some of the highest levels of tryptophan, actually even more than turkey. But I would take a look to make sure you aren't having some of the fishes that are either, you know, overcaught or have too much mercury in them. And so kind of take a look on the Environmental Working Group site, which I mentioned before. They talk about some of the healthier fish options that will provide another good source of tryptophan. Spinach, we talked about leafy greens before, and that, again, they're rich in potassium and magnesium. Spinach is also high in calcium, which is another mineral that plays a role in sleep. And calcium can help your body generate melatonin, which we talked about before, is that hormone that helps your body maintain its circadian rhythm. And, you know, the calcium connection and the vitamin D, all these things play a role in why our bodies aren't naturally producing the right amount of melatonin that it should. And you can get the same benefits from other leafy greens. You know, some of the other ones that are good are the Swiss chard, kale, greens, collard greens, turnip greens, a lot of greens. All the greens play a good role in your overall health as well as in sleep. And almonds. Almonds are also full of magnesium and another source of calcium. And you can eat a handful of almonds in the afternoon or have some almond butter and a piece of whole grain bread, sort of that protein whole grain combo we mentioned before, and how that's effective because the insulin your body produces in response to the carbs makes it easier for the tryptophan to break through your brain's barrier. And there was a study done by MIT that took a look at that. You know, and creating that bedtime ritual, getting comfortable, not napping too much during the day so that you are ready to go to sleep, and managing your stress. You know, we talked a little bit about that with the list writing of why having too much on your mind can interfere with your sleep, but really finding ways, not just right before bed, but throughout the day and throughout the week, to manage your stress. Because when you do have too much on your plate and too much to think about and too much to do, your sleep is definitely going to be affected. And so you have to figure out those healthy ways to manage your stress levels, you know, on a regular basis, because the stress isn't going to go away. And it's really not so much, you know, there's sort of a paradigm shift now in thinking about stress, is that it's not so much the stress that harms us, but it's the way that we cope and manage our stress. So you really can't get away from stress. There's also been, you know, stress is not a new thing. People have experienced stress throughout time, you know, stress being we need to forage for food and make sure we have enough food, you know, stress being, you know, I need to make sure I have appropriate shelter. I mean, stressors in the environment, in our environment, is not something that's new or unnatural. It's just the amount of the stress, the way that we cope with the stress, And that's what's really sort of been increasing. And, you know, physical activity will help manage stress. Yoga, meditation, you know, getting organized, setting your priorities, you know, giving yourself the opportunity to take a break when you need one, and making sure you find time to still do things that you enjoy and that you derive pleasure from, and seeing friends, and having a social network and a social support, and, you know, sharing a laugh, finding humor. And so those aspects of our life beyond simply our to-do list and the tasks help manage our stress levels and help us cope with stress, and therefore in turn affects our ability to sleep better and be more rested. And so, you know, figuring out what works for you in managing your stress is an important thing to do. And for a lot of people that is exercising, going to the gym, doing yoga, or it's another pursuit they like, such as painting or drawing, or even just, you know, going out and having a nice meal with someone and sharing some conversation, and, you know, taking time to make plans and be social. All those things can help manage our stress levels. Acupuncture can also be great. I know a lot of people who deal with stress and anxiety and have high levels of that. Acupuncture can be a good tool in managing stress as well. And even, you know, talk therapy, finding someone, if it's you know, a friend or a family member that you want to talk to about your stress, or a social worker or a psychologist. All, you know, there are a lot of professionals out there who will help you in being able to talk things through and help manage your stress, so it's manageable and not overwhelming. And, you know, at the end of the day, you really do need to know and acknowledge when your sleep issue might be something you need to contact your doctor about. You know, a lot of us will have the sleepless night. You know, really, if there's something major going on in your life, it can be hard to put it aside and go to sleep. Or if you have a flight the next morning and you're anxious about oversleeping, or you have a big presentation and no matter what you're trying to do, you know you'll be better if you get the rest, you still just have those jitters and you might not be able to fall asleep fully. And, you know, that's normal, that's natural. But if your trouble sleeping is chronic and on a long-term basis, it's something you do want to talk to your doctor about and see if there might be some sort of underlying cause that's preventing you from getting the sleep that you need. You know, losing sleep is just not something to be taken lightly. It really can have long-term effects on our weight, on our concentration, on diseases such as diabetes and hypertension, and even with your relationships, because you tend to be more irritable and snappy, and you just that moodiness can affect your relationships with others. And so, you know, some of the things that we talked about, I hope you'll consider trying to implement even tonight, and so that you can improve the quality and the quantity of your sleep. You know, ideally shooting for that 6 to 8 hours a night. You know, I know there are people who are probably laughing and just saying, you know, it's impossible. I just can't. I have to do this and stay up late and get up early, and, you know, it's just there's too much going on. But, you know, trying to add in that extra sleep when you can. So maybe it's just trying to turn in half an hour earlier each night and seeing if that works. And then maybe try and up it a little bit more and see if you can slowly get to that 6 to 8 hours level a night. And maybe it's not every night, but, you know, just if you can for the near future, try to make short-term targets of trying to increase your sleep. And maybe over time it will turn into a habit. Because ultimately, sleep has a correlation to life expectancy. So, you know, there's been data from some studies that show that sleeping 5 hours or less per night for an extended period of time can increase mortality risk from a number of causes by roughly about 15%. So, I mean, that's significant in terms of the long-term chronic effects of not getting enough sleep, you know. And, you know, there's an estimated 50 to 70 million Americans who do have some type of sleep disorder. It's definitely something that we should look into and get checked out and try to correct if possible. And if it is some more serious sleep disorder, talking to your doctor. And, you know, this is not always something people talk about with their doctors. You know, sleep isn't the first thing that comes to mind, and not all doctors will ask about it and ask about how you're sleeping. But if you are suffering from chronic sleep issues, then definitely bring them up to your doctor. And, you know, hopefully there'll be more awareness around the impact of sleep problems and, you know, the effects it's having on just sort of the overall health status of our population. So I would encourage you to try to make steps to improve your sleep, and if there is some issue with it, that you seek medical advice if you need to try and correct those chronic sleep issues, or a variety of sort of natural and alternative methods that are out there as well. So there's a host of resources out there on sleep. I'm sure it's actually, I think I read in one report, one of the more frequently Googled things, because so many of us are suffering from issues with our sleep and, you know, having sort of troubled sleep where we can't fall asleep, we can't stay asleep, we wake up, you know, we wake up with racing heart or racing mind. And so all of these things can help be improved through some lifestyle changes and some conscious choices that we make in throughout our day in terms of the level of physical activity we get, and in our evening, what we're doing, you know, in the hours leading up to bedtime. And so I would encourage everyone to try and improve, you know, their quality of quantity sleep by implementing, you know, some of these measures. It's kind of ambitious to, you know, do everything perfectly every night. And, you know, I don't actually know anyone who has a perfect sleep routine down. But to the extent you can incorporate some of these things, I would strongly encourage you to try. And hopefully you'll get more Z's, more restful Z's. And, I mean, it is just amazing. I had posted a couple months ago on my Facebook status that, you know, I'd gotten a solid 8 hours of sleep, and it was an amazing drug getting solid 8 hours of sleep. And all the comments were kind of, wow, I haven't got that in years, and wow, how'd you do it? And it's just so telling of really how much we don't emphasize sleep as an important feature of our health. So in addition to eating right and exercising, getting proper rest, and managing our stress, those are really all key criteria to health and happiness. And so every day we take small steps to improve is another day that we're working towards a healthier and happier journey. And so I thank everyone for listening today. I hope you found it interesting and informative and inspiring to get more sleep and take care of yourself and put yourself, you know, and your needs, your physical needs, you know, as a priority. As always, you can contact me with any questions, jenniferfduffy@gmail.com. You can also give feedback at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and click the follow button and send us a message. I hope you'll check out Monday's show, which is Walk Your Talk with Leanne into the Heart of Adoption at 8 p.m. Eastern. And on Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, we have Fun to Fortune Startup Success, Find Your Voice. So that's it for today. I'm wishing everyone a very happy, healthy weekend and a restful night's sleep tonight. Take care.